roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Excited to hang out with you for the next hour, maybe a few minutes. Past the hour, we've just been going long lately, bringing it. Got a lot to cover today, so we do have a UFC Fight Night show this weekend, and we're gonna, you know, talk about that. Maybe I'll throw you a solid and give you guys a fighter that I'm looking at. Of course, I think it's gonna be a little bit of a homer pick, but I really do feel strong, so I'm teasing that right now. We'll cover the latest news, of course. I can't get away from it. You know, Jake Paul versus Tyron Woodley. If we told you it was likely to happen on Monday, well, it's going to happen August 28th. Cool. Well, this guy's got some power in his hands. Maybe he can put Paul to sleep and put an end to all this. But I'm not hating on the Paul brothers in the sense that they are pretty business savvy. One of them was fighting Logan Paul's fighting Mayweather in about a week or so, and then these guys are going to dance at the end of the summer. So good for them, man. Honestly, they figured out a way to get into the sweet science and make it lucrative. So anyway, Tito Ortiz, he's done with politics. Talk a little bit about that. And speaking of the Mayweather-Paul fight, there's a rule set that have been publicized now. It's an exhibition, folks. There's not even going to be a winner. So who knows if we'll spend too much time. But, you know, if others are interested, then it forces us to be interested because we want to talk about what interests you all. Colby Covington, he says he's over it. I'm not going to fight Masvidal. It was a fight I wanted at one point, but now with Masvidal kind of clearly out of the title picture, he really wants to just focus on Kamaru Usman. He says there's a number one next to my name. It's all about Usman. I don't want to settle for my ex-best friend, Jorge Masvidal. Mike Bond with catch up there with Colby Covington. We'll talk about that. And, of course, Tough is back. Ultimate Fighter Season 29 started on Tuesday. We'll talk about the episode. And we have a guest from this season. It's middleweights and bantamweights. We'll be talking to Extreme Couture's Miles Hunsinger. He'll join us at 9:40 a.m. Pacific time. So we'll talk about this first episode. He's on Team Ortega. And so far, so good. I'm not a big fan of The Ultimate Fighter, but I watched the episode this morning, and so far, so good. I got to tip my hat. All right, folks, it's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, June 3rd. Guys, let's talk a little bit about Tough, just a little bit, and then we'll come back and finish up with Miles Hunsinger as we go through the episode with him. So I watched it, and I guess, I was a little bit of a negative Nancy. I'm kind of over the series because I'm a big fan of Dana White Contender Series. But once Dana White started rolling out the facts, 11 champions, 5 Hall of Famers, and that's not even that doesn't even bring up the ones that have just become huge stars that may not have become a world champion. It's done its job. I felt like it's run its course, but maybe this time off is what made me kind of – it endeared me. As I was watching it, I was like, yeah, all right, let's do it. Because you know what? It was the athletes that got me back into it. They were psyched, man. It was their big moment. Dana White's gone through this a million times. And then the coaches seemed pretty psyched to be into it as well. So I guess I may have been wrong. You know, anything I was saying in the last 24, 48 hours about not being all that pumped up, I liked it. I recorded it, and it's set to record for the season.
Yeah, they kind of built – it's become just an institution within the UFC, right? There's a little bit of – there's actual fighters that grew up wanting to become a mixed martial artist that watched the show and possibly are now on the show because of how long it's actually aired. So I understand why they were so excited. And, you know, I think all day we can list the positives and the negatives between Dana White's Contender Series and Tough. Right away, I could tell you, Dana White's Contender Series, you're right there. You know, you get a good win. You look good. You're in. This, you're kind of secluded for a while. You got to go through a little bit. But at the same time, maybe somebody can argue, look at all the camera time I log in too, you know. And so you get good training from different coaches, some of the top fighters in the world. But I've always said this, man. When I show up for Tough, I usually show up for the coaches. I like to see the coaches get into it. I like to see what they're like because that's really what sells me on that pay-per-view. Every once in a while, you'll come across situations where fighters are talking smack in the house, and you can't wait for those two to fight. But for me, it's really about the coaches, and so far, the coaches have just been interesting. I haven't figured them out yet, but they've been pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is it's old to me because it's its 29th season across 15, 16 years. So I've watched plenty of these, watched them all. But for the guy that's 25 and he's on the season, he acts, man. This is his huge opportunity. One way or another, he or she didn't get on Dana White Contender Series, or they're not headlining a CFFC or an LFA or a Cage Warriors. So this is the opportunity that was presented to him, and that's what they have to do. You know, I just got to get over the whole, you know, get out of the van and race to get the good room and the good beds and, you know, the drama of who got picked first and who got picked last, who's Mr. or Miss Irrelevant, and the reminder that Kelvin Gastelum was one of, you know, like you just gone through a lot of those over and over. But for them, it's their first time. Usually it's the coach's first time. Some coaches, I believe a couple have repeated. But Ortega looked into it, Volkanovski looked into it. And the fact remains, one of my big hiccups is when the coaches are held off for a good 6 months because of this damn show, and they can't fight, especially when a division has a bunch of killers lined up. But the reality is Volkanovski had COVID, and so he wouldn't have been able to fight Ortega anytime soon. So that's that. Max Holloway, who's waiting in the wings, he's got another fight as well. Yair Rodriguez, if you didn't hear, that was signed last week. So that's cool. And I guess seeing a couple of the cats from Extreme Couture that I've seen their faces for so many years, it's their big opportunity. So I want to be there and support them. And again, Miles Hunzinger will join us at 9:40 a.m. Yeah. Pacific time.
And Miles Hunzinger is a perfect example of somebody who probably would have been very appealing for a Dana White's Contender Series because he's got an undefeated record. You know, and he's been doing this for a pretty long time. He's somebody that probably would have fit that bill. So that's why I'm kind of interested to talk to him and figure out why it is they decided to put him here versus the Dana White's Contender Series, where a lot of his training partners have been very successful. I mean, look at Dan Ige. That's where he came from. Kapuna, Soriano, that's where he came from.
Yeah. There's a really, really good chance that the 24, 25-year-old that's on this season didn't even watch season one. They may not even really be too familiar with Couture and Liddell, and other than they were world champs and they've seen a highlight, but they may not know all their fights. And it's just a whole different generation. I have to accept that. And I will. And I'll power through this season. And we'll definitely talk about it on every show, every one of our Thursday shows. But we'll talk more about that towards the end of the show. And let's get to these Paul brothers. Let's get them out of the way. Logan Paul did a hitting pad session, I guess. You know, there was it was like a media day. The media was there, and he did an open workout. That's what I meant to say. And I mean, there's just nothing that I saw there that led me to believe that even on Mayweather's worst day, having not boxed in a while, that he's going to be in any – that Mayweather's going to be in any sort of trouble. I do tune in on these type of fights. I only tune in because I don't want to miss out on someone who's undefeated losing. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to happen.
Well, I think the way you can kind of – when you put this all in perspective, look at it this way. There's been times where an elite fighter like Canelo Alvarez or Manny Pacquiao has looked great. You know, you watch him and you go, oh, man, he's hitting the bag. He's doing some sparring rounds. even when he looks really good, you still go, ooh, but it is Floyd Mayweather, and he's hard to hit. For those guys who've been doing this since they could barely walk, okay? So even if Logan Paul has the greatest workout of all time, and you go, wow, he hits that bag so hard, and he's so quick, it really doesn't matter. Because he's never in a million years going to outbox Floyd Mayweather. His only chance is to land a lucky shot, a big power shot, and hope he KOs him. That's his only shot. But he's not taking him to the eighth round and trying to put him away. He can do whatever he wants in these workouts. At the end of the day, it's Floyd Mayweather. This is probably the best boxer that we've ever seen. He rarely gets hit by professionals. So I think you just have to
think about the times that De La Hoya missed his head. You know, you become a headhunter in there with Floyd at some point. You get away from you deviate from game plans. But even the young Canelo, an older De La Hoya, you know, a lot of big, you know, De La Hoya's about 5'11". Canelo's thick. You know, he probably rehydrates to, at this point, 180 or so. But these are some big cats, man. He's just not there to be hit, you know. But it's upon us. It's literally happening, like, just over a week. And the question is, will we tune in? Will we tune in because we don't want to miss out on the loss? But more on that, because there's not even going to be a loss. Because here are the silly rules per the Florida Commission. Shout out to Mark Raimondi from ESPN who sat down with the Florida Commission. There's not even going to be judges, goes. There's not even going to be an official winner that's red, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because obviously, even if Floyd were to knock him out, he's not going to win the fight. So he's not going to go to 51-0. Knockouts are legal. By the way, isn't that funny? Who Logan Paul, who has been training boxing for a while, could only get an exhibition, but and has the one fight. But Conor McGregor, who had no fights, was able to get it sanctioned. I mean, he does train in boxing, obviously. When you're in a mixed martial arts, you train in everything, but on the technical side. Knockouts are legal, so it's not like you have to hold back on your punches. You just won't be an official winner. You know, I guess he'll pick them up, and then they'll both raise their arms, and they'll thank the public, but no winner red. Knockouts are legal. The KO is really up to the ref's discretion. So, I don't know if there has to be a standing eight, you know, those types of set of rules. I think if he just sees someone's out of it, Logan Paul's, basically, I think he can just say, you know what, he's had enough. There's going to be no headgear, 12-ounce gloves. So not even 8 or not even 10. 8-ounce gloves are used on fights that involve the welterweight division on down, so that's 147 on down. And from 154 on up, which is known as super welterweight or junior middleweight, depending on the sanctioning body, they use 10-ounce gloves. Now, it can usually be that can usually be negotiated. You know, it was negotiated in the Mayweather and McGregor fight, but they're going to use 12-ounce gloves in this one, so not even the 10 that they should probably be wearing. And there's going to be 8 3-minute rounds, not 12 3-minute rounds. So what do you think?
I mean, it's kind of silly, but that's the boat that we're in. I think the strangest thing of the whole thing is just no judges, no winner. To me, then we're basically just watching a sparring session, really, at the end of the day, right? I understand the bigger gloves. I get it. It's not like Floyd's a knockout artist or anything like that, but okay, I get that one. 8 rounds, sure,
but he did negotiate 8-ounce gloves against Conor in a fight that should have had 10-ounce gloves. And I think it's because he knew, okay, because Floyd's got the brittle hands. Remember, he's always been protective of his hands. But I think he felt like in this one, I want to have as small of a glove when I connect with this guy because I'm going to put him away at some point. So we'll see. I think at this point, you know what I really hope? I just hope one or the other, and more than likely it will be Floyd, just knocks the other one the fuck out. That's it. I don't really want to watch 8 rounds of sweet science. There's nothing that I'm going to be watching there that's going to be exceptional, other than Floyd, obviously, but I've seen him do that for many years against the top-notch fighters, so that's not going to impress me too much, you know, the way he's going to set traps, bob and weave, feint, you know, maybe strategically win rounds or whatever. None of that's really going to impress me. I'm just going to basically sit on the edge of my seat and hope one guy happens to knock the other one the fuck out.
So you're tuning in both show?
If I do, yeah. That's what I'd be tuning in for. I don't care who the athletes are. I don't care who the ref is, who the celebrities are. That'd be just be one of those where you go, yo, gee, they're literally about to touch gloves and come out. I don't care about the rest and, you know.
No.
Nah. Like, if there's a band before that or nothing.
You don't want to watch the snap off?
Nah. I don't. Hmm. I don't want to watch that. I don't know. Just the 24 minutes, if it takes that long. Hopefully it doesn't. But I know Floyd's going to carry him for about 4 rounds, kind of like he did with Connor, and then turn it on, I guess.
All right.
But you're down with this fight?
No. I'm just surprised that you don't care about anything else, like whatever else they throw on there.
No. I cared for Ben Askren and because I guess part of the MMA component was tied in. So I was Team MMA. And I will be for Woodley. But for this one, nah. And that's if I even order it. I have no plans on ordering it as of this moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who knows if I can be talked into it or whatever. But that rule set, you know what it sounds like, is like one of us has a lot of money and has a big old fancy backyard, and we set up a ring in the backyard, and we just decided to get 2 famous friends to go in there and box.
Yeah, that's what it is. But you know what, though, with Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley, that one I have a little bit more interest in. And I'm very surprised that people are betting Jake Paul. I get it. Okay, he knocked out Ben Askren. I get that. But Tyron Woodley, that's a little different. You know, that's a different beast. And I just see T-Wood all day in this one. I could be wrong, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, this one's got a component of bad blood. Things were already heating up when Tyron Woodley was sent over as part of Team Askren to watch them wrap the mitts of Jake Paul. And started, you know, it was really more Jake Paul's corner. What's that guy's name? Easy Love or D Love or something. He started kind of coming at Woodley a little bit. I can't hate him for that. That guy's probably looking for his payday. Woodley played it cool. But Woodley's in a good spot right now because he doesn't have to ask for permission from the UFC. He's kind of out of contract. He's a free agent. I'm not even sure that his time with the UFC is up. They could re-sign him. Maybe so, maybe not. He's 39 going on 40. I should say probably not. But this opportunity came up, and so he gets to avenge his homie, and there's the bad blood that's already, you know, instilled in the fight. So, yeah, I think I do want to watch. I want to see how this guy does against a good, strong puncher from MMA. Not in his prime, but I don't think he's, you know, he's not like Liddell when he fought Tito, like where he was way out of his prime. I think Liddell hadn't fought in at least 10 years when he fought Tito over at Golden Boy MMA. This one's not that bad. Woodley's fought a couple times just in the last year alone. So I want to watch that. And I think my final hurdle for me to finally go, come here, Jake Paul, I want to give you a hug, would be if he can beat T. Wood, but then beat an actual professional boxer who has a similar experience as him, then I'd go, you the man, you know. But right now I feel like he's cherry picking still.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm like you. I can't really hate on these guys. It almost seems like a giant what if, you know, and we're always joking around, like, what would it take for you to do this? I think they just look at life like that. Like, what would it take for me to get my ass kicked? And they say, all right, this amount. And somebody goes, we'll make it happen. And they show up and they go, God, I can't believe they made it happen. I guess I got to train for a little bit. And they do it. But they make it work, dude.
Well, they're better than the average bear, that's for sure. And they do train, and they do have legit, you know, coaches and trainers and this and that or whatever. But again, he's beating a YouTube star, he's beating a former NBA player, and he's beating a former MMA star, one who was definitely not known for having any boxing skills. I mean, that sounds terrible because it's not like Ben didn't train boxing, but I mean, probably having the least formidable boxing skills of some of the former champs attached to our sport. There you go. I have to spell it out because someone will trip me up on YouTube or Twitter and then, you know, calling me disrespectful. And but I did want to say, did you see Logan Paul when he was hitting that big old bag?
Mm-hmm.
What was that strategy? There was nothing impressive about that.
Yeah, I think he just didn't want people to see his real skills. You know, because I think people are just going to see a guy that's probably going to hit focus mitts and miss a couple times and do that kind of thing. So I think his whole thing was, just, I'm just going to bang this bag for a little bit, and that's a wrap.
It looked like a Impractical Joker skit. Like, I honestly thought they were going to unzip the bag and Sal was going to fall out. And it just looked comical. It was an ugly brown color, like a bean bag being used.
Like Santa's back or something.
Huh?
It looked like Santa's sack or something. Like there was going to be a bunch of like, all uneven and shit. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, whatever. This guy is going to get paid millions to compete against Floyd Mayweather in an exhibition boxing match. For Jake Paul and T-Wood, not to get sidetracked, that one's on August 28th. And I don't believe a location's been determined just yet, but we know it's August 28th. So that gives both guys adequate time to get ready. At least they can get past the Logan Paul Mayweather fight, breathe for about a week, and then boom. Because you know Jake's probably going to be involved. At one point, he was going to be banned from the event because of the gotcha hat deal that he did at the press conference. But I guess he's allowed back in. So you know they'll go in there, they'll put on a show, those brothers. So I'm sure Floyd Mayweather will be the better of the two, even though nobody will be declared the winner. And then after that, the focus will be Jake Paul and T-Wood did say he's going to make good coin off this, so good for him.
Yeah, good for him. He deserves it. But I don't know where he would go from there. As far as MMA goes, there's places that would take him, but I don't know that he's going to get – it's hard when you make that kind of money and then you go back down in salary for doing the same damn thing you've been doing. That's got to be tough, and he's going to have to probably accept that if he deals with a Bellator, a PFL, or a ONE Championship. But I feel like something like this, to me, has PFL written all over it. I think it's going to give him enough time, a good paycheck, some time to rest, and then get prepared for that next season.
If I'm not mistaken, too, T-Wood, I know, was on one Conor McGregor pay-per-view, but I think he was on two. So he got two title defenses, which means he got pay-per-view points on two Conor McGregor cards. That had to be lucrative for him. But when he had to go back to his regular pay, which didn't involve pay-per-view points, that had to A, hurt, and just be a cold reality check, you know, of just the difference of being champ and not. And remember, Woodley was very protective of his spot. He says he would never turn down the fight, and I believe him. But what I did also see was him trying to take other fights that would maybe be a little bit more beneficial. But then again, I think that was just him kind of protecting his spot. He always seemed to fight the top guys in his division. You know, he would just bring up certain things like, you know, I kind of want to, you know, do this and do that. And to me, it always seemed more about like what definitely benefited him, but not the division. I guess every fighter has a little bit of that component in them. You know, what do they care about the division? They care about their pocketbook. I finally made it. Let me cash some big checks and then get the hell out of Dodge.
You know what I think is going to happen, George? Because one of our listeners was saying after T. Wood's done with this brother, he's going to call out the other brother. I don't think that's going to happen because he's going to get completely murked by Mayweather. There'll be no interest there. But what I do think will happen is I think Oscar De La Hoya is the name that would match up with him. He wants a former champion, right? T-Wood's a former champion. We get to see the box. I think that's what's going to end up happening.
The Kawa brothers were teasing Pettis, which is another client of theirs, versus De La Hoya. And I think Alvarez was another name that was thrown out there. Alvarez isn't with the Kawa brothers, but Woodley and Pettis are. So maybe they have an idea of who might work and who might not work. And from De La Hoya's brand, they may personally like working with that team, you know, mm-hmm. and whatever their stable is. So we'll see. I don't think he'll fight Logan Paul if he beats Jake Paul, unless Logan Paul beats Mayweather, or unless there was something backstage that was so controversial it just needed to happen, but I don't think it'll happen. But I do think Tyron Woodley's going to win. You were right. On most houses, most betting houses have Jake Paul at like minus 150, minus 160. But shop around, because if you're a believer in Jake Paul, you can get him as an underdog. There's some houses that have Tyron Woodley at minus 150 and Jake Paul on the comeback at about plus 130. So if you're a Paul fan, shop around because you may be able to find him as a dog. If you're a Woodley fan, you're going to find a lot of houses that have him as a dog. You don't have to lay the 150 to win 100 on him. Shop around because this one was kind of unique. You saw minus 150 for both guys. Bet only where it's legal. All right. Next up, Tito Ortiz is out of politics. Shocker?
No, not in the least bit. I'm surprised he survived this long. From day one, that was a bad fit, right? Like, I understand what he wanted to do, but he went in there and did none of that. It was, he reminded me of like that kid in class where you saw him on the first day and then he sprinkled in a couple appearances and then all of a sudden he shows up a month later and you go, you're still in this class? Like, I really don't understand what the point of all that was, but I'm glad it's over.
I think he could have done well in terms of if he applied himself, because he's very well known in Huntington Beach. And Huntington Beach is a city that's conservative, which is the side Tito's on. So if he really would have applied himself, I think this would have been an interesting transition. You know, a lot of fighters become firefighters. A lot of fighters become coaches. A lot of fighters, I shouldn't say a lot on this one, but some become a judge or referee. We've only seen a few of those. But, you know, a lot of fighters don't make enough to just survive on, hey, look, I'm famous, I'm the next fighter. But this would have been an interesting career path. Chael Sonnen tried it. Chris Lytle tried it. Walt Harris, who's a current fighter, tried it, you know. So if you guys got close, but Tito was actually a councilman in Huntington Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And right away, you know, it was very controversial from the beginning. And all I can say is, to me, it just looked like lack of interest, lack of applying himself. And in the end, this was inevitable. So I wasn't too shocked when I read it. And I've said it quite a few times before, but I'll say it one more time because I think this will be the last time we talk about it. I just think that he thought that Donald Trump would get reelected. And so in his tenure, he would have a close ally in basically the most powerful man in the country or in the world, who is mm-hmm. the United States president. And that would maybe give him opportunities to either keep going or maybe it could benefit him in another way. And that would be that. But, you know, as we all know, Donald Trump didn't get reelected. And so I think he just sat there thinking, well, there goes one of my strongest allies. And you know, just, you know, I'm not as interested as I once was.
Yeah, I think he thought a lot more doors could possibly open, but it just didn't work out. It's so weird, man. You know, like, we talked about that generation that may not even know who Chuck and Tito and all these guys were, but we grew up with that generation. And Tito was actually one of my favorite fighters to watch. I enjoyed his style. He brought the trash talk to the game, you know. And I liked the way he fought, but now it's kind of hard to follow the guy, dude. It really is. It's I don't know what his next move is going to be. You know, could he be one of these guys that takes a fight with Triller or something like that? I mean, it seems his style, right?
He's built up his name. We got to give him that. And so now, whether it's Combate or Triller or Bare Knuckle or someone, you know, they can give him an opportunity. He can cash a $500,000 check. And then one thing he loves to do is get on his boat and fish, be with his kids. It doesn't seem like he really wants to do anything else in terms of, like, team, like Punishment Athletic kind of went to a certain level, but it never really peeked through. I've heard he's had a few gyms. I've never really heard about them blowing up or franchising. It seems like there's just always a payday out there for him, and he knows that his name carries that kind of weight. So good on him, however he can pull that off. But I just think that if you had given – if Randy Couture had won that slot, I think he would have given you an honest 4 years, 6 years, or 2 years, whatever the term is for council member, councilman in Huntington Beach. And I think he would have tried to do his best job, you know. And even the stuff when you knock on doors and – and, you know, talk to the citizen. I mean, it's not glamorous work. Some of it is when you get to some level, sure. But some of it isn't, and I think that's just what he wasn't willing to do. But I know a lot of other MMA fighters would have done.
I agree.
You're going to say something? Did I cut you off?
No, I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah. Anyway, the career's done. It's over. Let's get on to Colby Covington. He's not interested in fighting Masvidal next, and I agree with him there, but at some point I'd like to see the fight. I'd also like to see Dillashaw and Faber, although I don't think that's going to happen because Faber's now, you know, he's kind of picking his fights here and there. If he's going to do it at all anymore, who knows? I thought once he came back and beat Ricky Simone, who's a very respectable bantamweight, he should have said, all right, I had to get another fight in there, but I did it. I won. Now I'm bouncing, you know. But then he went in there and lost against Peter Yan, and now it's been another at least year or so since he's fought. Dillashaw's about 5-6 years younger. I love the bad blood, so I would love to see it. But that's the same way I would love to see Covington versus Masvidal. But I can agree with Covington in saying I shouldn't have to fight Masvidal next because Dana White's already said you're the number one contender.
Right.
And if Usman was willing to give Masvidal a shot, then he should be willing to give Covington a shot. And actually, Covington's probably a pretty good payday. I mean, unless Usman's got, you know, the belief that GSP or Conor McGregor or Habib's going to come back. I mean, those would obviously be more lucrative fights, but I don't think of them are. So at this point, I think Covington is the most lucrative fight. I see his point there, but I hope he doesn't think that others don't want to see that fight at some point. I think it would be a monster.
Yeah, I mean, we're always going to want to watch it. But it meant so much more a year ago, you know, had it happened around that time frame. When you think of, like, the Ultimate Fighter, that's what you want to see. You want to see two guys like that on there. You know, give me a few weeks of that, of tuning in and watching those guys go at it. And then on top of that, you're going to sell me a fight. They're tailor-made for something like that. Colby Covington, Tyron Woodley would have been another one good to bring back that show. But we're always going to want to tune in to see what happens because there's unfinished business. But the longer we wait, the less it really means. Kind of like Floyd and Manny a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And look out for that interview on our YouTube page if you want to see the whole thing with Mike Bond, who was doing a tour of South Florida, Sanford MMA, American Top Team, MMA Masters, three gyms down there. I'm sure he probably had a few other spots as well. Go to youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. And you can see all extended press conferences, Junkie Radio highlights, and interviews that are done by all of our staff. youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. It gets pretty tense at times. You know, Covington is all in on, he doesn't like somebody. I mean, he just slings mud left and right. I would prefer he would stick to the fighter themselves. Masvidal's this, you know, Masvidal's that, Usman's this, Usman. But he makes it personal, and I'm like, Covington, wow, balls of steel, just throwing a lot of personal shade out there.
I think he's in the moment. He's in it for the moment. I don't know that he's thinking long term, but, you know, you and I have been around Colby in different instances, and he can be a completely different guy. The type of guy where you look at him and go, that guy, there's no way he would be capable of saying some of the things that you see him say. He's just in the moment. I'm not trying to give an excuse or say that it's okay, but I think he just figured out, this is what I'm going to do, and if I'm going to do it, I'm all in. And I think he just shoved his chips, and he's all in, and we'll see what comes out of it. But I'll tell you what, if you keep winning fights, it ain't going to matter what you say. You know, people are going to want to tune in. We'll see. You know, the Usman fight was a little bit of a wake-up call, but at the end of the day, Usman's a beast. And Colby's given him the best fight he's had to date. So even in his loss, he kind of looked good. So we'll see what happens here. But it seemed like there was a time period where Dana White couldn't wait for him to be gone, you know, or lose. And now I think he's starting to get a little hip to, we might have something here.
Yeah, you know, I also noticed another thing. His delivery's a lot smoother. I mean, he's been a pretty good trash talker, but he never reached the elite with, like, the McGregors and Sonnens and some of the others that just don't really trip up over their words. It's always a smooth delivery. Covington's always had some pretty good smack talk, but he'll – sometimes he gets to a point where every answer's a witty line, and it doesn't have to be. But there was a point when he was with Mike Bond, and he was flowing. So good on him. You know, good on him. We need more of those guys. I don't know any news about Usman versus Covington, but I hope that that's one of the fights that gets made, because if you look out into the future, a lot of the champions have been active. We got two title fights coming up with Marvin Vettori and Israel Adesanya, and then Davison Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno. Amanda Nunes is going to defend her belt against Juliana Pena. Conor McGregor is going to that's not even a title fight. What am I thinking? We just had the coronation of the lightweight title with Charles Oliveira and Michael Chandler. But we know Ngannou's going to defend against somebody, probably either Jones or Lewis at this point. Blachowicz and Teixeira is on the books. So I'm just hoping we see Usman and Covington. I don't even care if they go November, New York, Vegas, December, whatever. Not that I personally know that those are official dates, but that just was the pattern in the last few years. I wouldn't mind that, because Usman did have a quick turnaround between Burns and Masvidal too, so he deserves a little bit of a rest in that regard. But as far as announcements, that would be pretty cool. Volkanovski and Ortega's kind of like set as a matchup. We just need to solidify the date. Go ahead.
What happens if Colby Covington loses that fight, though? Because Colby's one of those guys where I think you look at him and you go, I don't see that guy making 155. If he goes up to 180, huh?
He said he could. He said he could make 155. He told me that about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's true or not, but if it – I mean, did you ever think Aldo could make 135 or that Barboza could make 145? I mean, they came in chiseled at their own weight classes. Do you remember the Super 7 in – I think it was like April or May of 2010 when – GSP defended his belt. What was it? I think UFC 126 against Jake Shields. And they happened to have all seven. There was seven champions at the time. All seven champions were on a stage. They called them, I think, the Super Seven. And I guess Aldo was on the card, too. He was fighting what was his name? The kid that gave him a hell of a fifth round. He was part of Team Tompkins. Mark Hominick.
Hominick.
Yeah. Okay. But Aldo, I remember, was sitting there, and I thought he was going to faint. They were all on those director's chairs. Cruz, Aldo, I think Edgar may have been the 55 champ at the time, or Benson, I don't remember. But anyway, Anderson, GSP, they were there. But it looked like he wanted to faint. So that's why when they said he wants to go to bed, I'm like, you're fucking crazy. This guy has it rough at 45. But he's been able to, you know, in later years, tweak the body, learn more about science, and safely cut to 135. His voice doesn't change or anything like that. You know, he's still the same Jose Aldo. And Edson Barboza, I mean, as chiseled as you can get, I can't believe he makes 145. So I wouldn't put it past Colby to get down to 155. But if he loses to Usman, I want to be clear, I think the Masvidal fight is now reawoken. You know what I mean? I don't mind Colby saying, I want to fight Masvidal next. But I don't want him saying I don't want to fight Masvidal ever, because I think that's just too big of a fight for them to avoid, you know. But it would have to be if he loses to Usman. And if he beats Usman, then now he's looking at other title contenders. But maybe Masvidal can scoop up some wins and make a run at Colby as Colby as champ, you know. But, I mean, that's a lot of if he does that, if this guy does this, you know, it's too many moving parts.
Yeah. But the guys he referenced are strikers. You know, I can see them losing some weight. Colby would have to shed some muscle, and he's a wrestler. He's a grappler, you know. Like, I think he uses a lot of that power, a lot of that size. So I don't know. But you're right. He would always have the Masvidal fight. Masvidal's got a lot of lines, too. You know, he's always got the Leon Edwards fight. That's got to be resolved. Colby, I mean, that guy, you can look into his future and know he's going to be set. Even if he keeps losing, he just always has those fights.
Yeah. I still dream of 175 and 165. Think about how many things could open up if they did that. They don't want it.
No.
Every 10 pounds would be accounted for from 105 to 185. 195 does exist. But it's not acknowledged by the UFC. 165, 175 does exist. It's just not used by the UFC. And the UFC doesn't have an atomweight division, to be fair. But every division from 105 to 205 is acknowledged by the by ABC. So those rules are there. Those weight classes are there. And just one day they'll utilize them. They have a featherweight division that has maybe five people in it. One of them is the actual 135-pound champ. Mm-hmm. He's really more of a bantamweight. We don't think about her as a featherweight. But, you know, the other great one, Cyborg, they wouldn't re-sign her. Why are they keeping that division around? They won't keep that division, but they're afraid that there won't be enough 65ers and 75ers. Are you kidding me? On day one goes, there'll be 50 solid 75ers, 50 solid 65ers, and 85 and 55 they'll take their lumps a little bit, but you'll still have a great division.
I think they're keeping it around right now because of the possibility of maybe Kayla Harrison. You know, maybe that fight down the line, but there really is no reason to.
Well, even just a few months ago, Dana White said she wasn't ready. Then he kind of backtracked on that one. But it's just that type of inconsistency that drives me nuts. Miles Huntinger is going to join us very soon. He did confirm earlier. UFC 129, according to Galley from Toronto. So I got that one wrong. Did I hear Miles checking in?
No.
Okay. I'm not logged in through our normal way, so you'll have to just give me the heads up, right, Gus?
Okay.
All right, continuing on, Augusto Sakai does fight Jarzinho Rozenstruik. Pivotal fight here in the heavyweight division. I wouldn't say it's the number one contender, but the winner definitely puts himself in that type of conversation later this year if they were to get their hand raised. Who do you like? Who did you turn in as your pick for Junkie Staff Picks?
I turned in Biggie Boy. I like him in the fight. But this is the type of fight where I feel like he not only needs to win, he needs to win and sort of make a statement with the win. Because every time we have to turn in these picks, I'm not entirely sure what we have with him yet. There are times where you look at him at his game and you go, oh, this guy could be something. And then there's times where you look at it and you go, oh, man, he still needs some work. I don't know exactly what we have with this fighter yet, but I think he needs a win, and I think it needs to be emphatic. I think he has to put a stamp on it. And I think he will be able to do that this fight.
You're right, because sometimes it feels like Biggie is in cruise control, you know, and I just – you can't just win nowadays. You have to win and make a statement. Now, you can go to a decision and still make a statement. Robert Whittaker just did that with Kelvin Gastelum. So you don't always have to finish, but the effort has to be made there so that you can, A, impress your bosses, but, B, outshine someone that's in the same boat as you. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can actually leap ahead of somebody. Let's not forget, Volkov is in a pretty decent position as well. As a heavyweight, and Blades has those losses, but basically it's the two guys that might be fighting in the title. Two of them come to Ngannou, one comes to Lewis. So he has it's not like he's taking an array of losses to like six or seven dudes. No, he's only got to shake off one of those two. One of those two out of the way, Blades is right there. It'll be difficult against Ngannou because I've already fought him twice. But you got a couple of those pillars that are still there, and this is the way to get past them is by smashing your opponent on Saturday night. And the heavyweights have the benefit of being in the smaller cage, 25 feet across versus 30 feet across in the bigger cage. So it's less fighting quarters. Go ahead, sling them dogs.
Yeah, and he's with the team where no matter what, you know, when you're at that gym, you're going to get better no matter what. But he's got a set of coaches around him that I think can really figure him out and figure out what he needs to do to be successful. I can see big things for him, but like I said, I think this is a real pivotal matchup for him. I think it has to happen now.
Shout out to Gally from Toronto. It was Mark Hominick, UFC 129. I may have said UFC 126, but it was 129. It was a stadium show in Toronto, headlined by GSP and Jake Shields. The actual bonuses for that fight, I think, were the highest ever. They were actually 129,000. So as impressed as we all were for the 75K that Ferguson talked Dana White into giving out at UFC 262, a big jump from the normal 50,000. At one point, the UFC used to write even bigger checks. They wrote 129,000 for those cats. So a lot of good stuff in the history books. If you ever just want to go back, man, seriously, now with Fight Pass and ESPN Plus, you have the ability to basically go watch any of these shows we talk about. Go back and watch UFC 129. It was pretty special to all of us. It was the first stadium show, and, of course, it involved the great GSP. All right, we're ready to go, right, with Miles Hunzinger. We're going to set it up, and then we're going to be joined by one of the middleweights in the cast of this season's The Ultimate Fighter, Miles Hunzinger from Extreme Couture. What's up, Miles? How you doing? Welcome to MMA Junkie Radio. Welcome back, I should say.
Hey, what's up, fellas? Great to be here, man. Good to see my boys.
What did you think of The Ultimate Fighter and the way you were portrayed? You had some moments in there. Pretty cool. They focused on the two fighters from Extreme Couture. You know, you guys got a little bit of FaceTime. What did you think?
Yeah, man. You know, I loved it, man. They got me and Ryder, my boy Ryder, on there, and got to show off my beautiful family, man. So I really loved the way they portrayed me.
Yes, you were showing them the pictures. Your teammates were loving it. And, of course, we've seen your family over at Extreme Couture. Was that a rough six-week run there of being without them?
Yeah, man, truly it was, man. It was brutal, bro. Like, you know, I love my life. You know, I love my family. So to leave them was heartbreaking.
Especially because you were probably, what, within 10 miles of them? I don't know how far the house is from where you actually live, but let's call it 10, 20. You know, a lot of other fighters will fly from across the world or across the country, and maybe it's a little easier for them to just say, well, I can't see them. But you couldn't have been that far.
No, man. It was tempting, man. Not gonna lie. I was, like, looking out the back door, you know, thinking about jumping the bushes, you know, just to get a little family love. But, you know, it was awesome, man. There was a you know, during the day, it was a dream come true. But, hey, man, you definitely miss your family.
You were on Team Ortega. I know you can't share much about anything past week one. We have to be careful with that. But initially, that pretty much is where you wanted to go. I can't remember if he actually asked you and drew the triangle or if he pulled you aside. What can you tell us?
Yeah, you know, I was happy to just, you know, to be on either team, to be honest. They were you know, it was nothing really stuck out to me too much. I knew that they were both great fighters and, you know, was feeling, you know, blessed to be on either team.
Miles, how soon from the moment you get together with the cast and you guys get on the bus and all that, when do you start sizing people up and start doing a little research or whatever? You know, I remember this guy from here or any, like, when does that process start?
You know, it was funny because, the other guys were really into that, man. And for me, you know, I've been around the sport for a long time, and you know, I didn't think too much about that, to be honest, man. I knew that I had to be ready to fight any of them, and so to me, it didn't matter who, you know. It just, but I could definitely feel that from all the other guys right away.
You know, it's been a minute since we've seen The Ultimate Fighter, and it felt so good to just see that whole thing come down. It's a little different now because obviously a lot of it's at the Apex. But one question that I think you'll probably get a lot and that we hear a lot is he's an undefeated fighter. We've seen him before. Why not maybe the route of Dana White's Contender Series? Can you kind of explain to us how you ended up with the tough position?
Yeah. You know, it was just I don't know. I just felt like I couldn't pass up on it, man. I wanted the contender series route. To be honest, it would have been better with the family and all that. You know, the guys seemed to like me and really want me on the show, so I couldn't say no.
Can you share maybe some last minute advice from teammates, coaches? Because there's a lot of teammates that are there at Extreme Couture that have actually been through the show, that have been through that process. Can you share maybe a moment or something of advice that somebody gave you before you left?
Yeah, absolutely, man. So my coach, Amir Sadala, you know, he's a tough champ. And so we were talking a ton before the show, man. And he did a really good job of sharing his experience. And, you know, he had to fight his roommate, you know, in a crazy war. And so to get all that advice from him was great going into the show.
Well, Andre Petrosky got the win, and now he preserves the ability for you guys to match up. I've always thought that was more important, was the matchup, not necessarily the first fighter. Dana White did a good job of reminding everybody that Kelvin Gastelum was the last fighter in one of the seasons chosen, and he actually won the season. But you guys are now, you know, still in control, so I think that's important. And we look forward to, obviously, the next weeks that unfold. And hopefully we can catch up with you like this, you know, on a couple of these weeks throughout the season. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Great to see you on The Ultimate Fighter, and we obviously wish the best for you throughout the season, however it may unfold.
Hey, appreciate it, brother, man. Thanks for always having my back, guys. We appreciate you guys.
All right, take care, Miles. We'll see you.
Take care.
All right, there you have it. There's Miles Hunsinger. I like your shirt, Ghost. I really did.
That was cool, right? It stood out as soon as I saw him. I was like, that's why I wanted to know what it said and what the meaning was on it.
I'll have to ask him about the gym. Broken Down does sound like something like having to do with MMA, you know, maybe the rest, some sort of apparel from wrestling brand or something like that. I don't know, but I like the color. Not to bag or anything, but it does look like if me, you, Miles, and a few other guys grew out mustaches, Miles already has one, and we threw on those shirts, we could be part of the Joker or the Riddler's crew, right? Fighting Batman and Robin in the old school series.
Yeah. I'd look stupid with a mustache, though. I've played around before. I look ridiculous, dude.
Do I still have that Hitler mustache or no? Ghost says, that according to the lighting, when I have my goatee, because I have white hair here but darker hair here, somehow I wind up, this part doesn't show, and I wind up having a little bit of a Hitler mustache.
Yeah, it was, I mean, if I focus in now, maybe I could see it, but when you were in California, yeah, it was totally like that.
Goes, I'm telling you, those guys like Bristol, and, you know, he has family. Miles has a family. It's got to be more brutal for the Vegas guys, because you're right. All they want to do is maybe look over a wall. That wouldn't be illegal. Who snuck out, by the way? Didn't someone sneak out in season one to meet up with a girl?
Oh, season one, no. But Jeremy Jackson did, and he got kicked off the show, remember? It was a lifeguard.
Yeah. Scorpion. So all I'm saying is you would think that if you knew the location and you just looked over a wall – you know, your family could be across the street and just wave at you. You know, I don't know. I mean, Vegas is, I think there's 2 million of us between Henderson and Vegas. But it's like a valley within some mountains. And so even though it does take from like the northwest to the southeast or the southwest to the northeast, it can take about an hour. It's still all pretty close in a way. I have an idea of where the house is. They kind of relocate them from time to time, but they're a little bit north of the strip. And I think most of the MMA fighters that I know, I'd say 75% live in the southwest, southeast. There's not as many that live on the south side. So I would say that he was within 10 or 15 miles of his family, had to be eating them up. His kids go to his practice. His kids go to the practice a lot. And I've seen his girl as well at the practice. So he's very, very close to his fam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's got to be rough for sure.
Yeah. But that was a great question you asked him, because I don't know if Griffin goes in a lot anymore to Extreme Couture, but he probably knows Miles, because Miles has been there probably just short of a decade. But Amir Sadala, Puna Soriano, like you said, a lot of them have been in there, have been a part of either Dana White or The Ultimate Fighter, and they can give advice to a lot of these younger guys as far as what they're going to do.
But there's Brad Tavares. There's Gray Maynard. Vinny Magalhães. They were all on top.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Vinny's fighting at the next PFL. Remember he had that weight cut issue?
Yeah.
In the last fight card. He wasn't going to be a part of this season, and then he got the call. But then after the weigh-ins, he had a problem. And the only problem is he's a minus one, so I don't think he can mathematically move on. And but he'll at least get paid, I guess. And the opponent has to fight someone. You don't want to just gift that person 3 points. So it'll work out. Magalhães made it all the way to the finals a few years ago. He lost to Sean O'Connell, but he picked up 200K. Runner-up gets 200K. The winner gets a mil, as you all know. But PFL, by the way, if we haven't spoken about it, we're going to turn it up a little bit next week because it's going to be fun to watch. Let me see. Who is it? Featherweights? Featherweights and lightweights, yeah. Compete. And only 4 per division make it. So as the night unfolds, some fighters are going to be, you know, they're going to be watching that TV to see how many points they need, and a lot of what they need to do will be dictated by the results of the earlier fights. The featherweight division, I think, has 3 guys with 3 points each, and one guy with 6 points. So they're all competing against each other in a way. I think 2 guys are actually tangled up, but in a way, it kind of reminds me of EPL. You know, some teams might get relegated, some teams might make Europa, some teams might make champions, all on the last day, and you get to see it unfold. So take a look at the PFL's website. It's excellent. And then look at the standings, and you'll get an idea. It'll be pretty compelling television. Things start off on ESPN Plus and go to ESPN2 next Thursday, by the way.
Here's an interesting thing about that whole situation in that division. I believe – so Brendan Loughnane has the highest point total, right? I can't remember who he's fighting, but by the time it gets to that fight, the guy that's fighting him may know exactly what he needs to get to the next round. And he might be in a position where the only way he can do it is if he KOs or subs Brendan in that fight. So really, you're going to see a situation unfold where this guy, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the opponent's name, but he may, like, after round one, be in a situation where no matter what happens, he cannot advance, you know, if he can't get that finish in round one. So it's going to be interesting. It's definitely a fun format over there at PFL. And it's funny, I think Miles fought at PFL once too, right? We've had Miles on a few times. So if you people are watching this and you recognize him, he's been in studio before. He's a good fighter. Like, you guys have to understand, there are these marquee fighters in the game. And then there are these fighters that are just, they're younger. They give fighters hell in the gym. Remember, like, there are very few fighters that you know that just kind of do their own thing. You know, like Ray Cooper in his garage. Or like, they all build off of each other in the gym. There are wars in the gym sometimes. And Miles is just one of those dudes that's just tough, man. And this situation here could be his break for him.
Yeah. I'll tell you real fast what's happening in the next PFL. What Goz is alluding to is the featherweights and the lightweights are fighting. And Brendan Loughnane is the leader. He's got 6 points. He's at the top. Brendan could lose to his opponent, and his opponent could technically knock him out of the playoffs. The reason is because his opponent could stop Brendan in the first round and he'd get 6 points, but the tiebreaker would be, I guess they'd both be in the same spot because they both have a finish in the first round. Mm-hmm. I'll take it back. But there's this tiebreaker rule in the PFL that if you win twice by decision, you can get passed over by someone who wins once but picks up the bonus points for finishing. Hopefully that didn't sound too confusing, but that's exactly what might happen. It's Tyler Diamond, but Tyler Diamond has 3 points. So if Tyler Diamond actually beats Brendan Loughnane, Tyler Dimes, by decision, Brendan Loughnane would still go. Did you know that?
Yeah.
If Tyler would have 3-3, and Brendan would have 6 from one fight, but because he got it via a finish in the first round, he would advance.
So yeah, Brendan's going to be safe. He'll be safe, but
what can happen here?
It's interesting the position that Tyler might be in, depending on what happens in the fights before him. When they get to that point, he may be in a situation where a decision win could be acceptable, but he also might be in a situation where he needs a KO and he needs it in round one. You know what I mean? So that's going to change. Think about it. If you're Brendan and you know that, you know, maybe all I need to do is just kind of chill in round one and get out of round one because he needs that to go forward. It's really going to be really, really interesting. Like, they're going to have to pay attention watching this live.
Khabibulayev and Wade also have 3 points, and they fight before Brendan Loughnane fights Tyler Diamond.
Yeah.
Bubba Jenkins also has 3 points. He fights after. So, obviously, the more you know, the better, I think. But maybe also more pressure. But, yeah, Khabibulayev and Wade will fight before, so maybe they can put these guys in tougher spots. But Diamond definitely might be in a spot where if those first two guys grab wins and have 6, then Diamond has to – well, he could just not have to worry about those two if he can beat Loughnane but finish them. And it doesn't have to be in the first, you know.
But you get more points.
You get more points, yeah. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a fun little twist. Sometimes that's what you need. When you're watching MMA, you know, if it's two fighters that maybe aren't fighting for a title, well, what are they fighting for? You know, pro wrestling used to draw people in just by a loser leaves town match. Or a retirement match, you know, in this case, it's just who can advance to win $1 million. And if PFL does a lot of marketing for that, I think they'll get some people to tune in. Anyway, more on that next week. Next week is Bellator 260, PFL 2021 week 4, and there'll be another UFC as well. We're getting close to the next pay-per-view, UFC 263 with Izzy and Figueiredo defending their belts. We're going to bow out for now. I want to thank Miles Huntzinger for his time. Check him out on season 29 of The Ultimate Fighter, week 1. Him and Ryder from Extreme Couture making appearances there. We know those guys from the gym. Good luck to both. Andre Patrice got the win this past weekend. So Team Ortega is up 1-0. I thought both coaches did very well, but it was fine. It was pretty cool watching Ortega kind of dive into the details a little bit, which, as you can tell, kind of helped lead this guy to the win. You know, and then he brought in Henner Gracie for the fight. So it was pretty cool to watch that. Funny to watch TV in the background just chilling with Dana White. He didn't take his assistant coach role too serious come fight night, but I'm teasing. He doesn't need it. Although Tiki's been in some corners of some big name championship fighters. So
yeah.
it's not like he couldn't do the job.
Paul Herrera on the coaching staff too.
Paul Herrera, yeah. Been a long time since I've seen him, but I thought he did very well.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never recognized them if they said, guess who this is, and didn't tell me who it was. But Paul Herrera fought in one of the early UFCs. He's a wrestler from the Huntington Beach area. But, yeah, good to see an OG-er like him. Thanks for joining us, as always, on Mondays and Thursdays here on MMA Junkie Radio. Obviously, we'll be back next Monday. And keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week for the fight night card to take place this Saturday with Augusto Sakai and Jarzynia Rozenstruik at the top of the bill. That's a pivotal matchup in the heavyweight division of the UFC. So we'll have all the best coverage there as the fights unfold from the UFC Apex. Follow Goz on Instagram and Twitter at TheGoz, TheGoze. And I'm at MMA Junkie George. The radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. All right, folks, we're out of here. Enjoy the weekend. Go out there and be a champion.